Chapter 34. "Good morning, madam," said Hoopdriver, as Jesse came into the breakfast room of the Golden Pheasant on Monday morning, and he smiled, bowed, rubbed his hands together, and pulled out a chair for her, and rubbed his hands again. She stopped abruptly, with a puzzled expression on her face. "Where have I seen that before?" she said. "The chair?" said Hoopdriver, flushing. "No, the attitude." She came forward and shook hands with him, looking the while curiously into his face. "And, madam?" "It's a habit," said Mr. Hoopdriver, guiltily. "A bad habit. Calling ladies madam. You must put it down to our colonial roughness. Out there up country, you know, the ladies so rare we call them all madam." "You have some funny habits, Brother Chris," said Jesse. "Be before you sell your diamond shares, and go into society, as you say, and stand for Parliament, what a fine thing it is to be a man. You must cure yourself. That habit of bowing as you do, and rubbing your hands, and looking expectant. It's a habit. I know. But I don't think it a good one. You don't mind my telling you? Not a bit. I'm grateful. I'm blessed or afflicted with a trick of observation," said Jesse, looking at the breakfast table. Mr. Hoopdriver put his hand to his mustache and then, thinking this might be another habit, checked his arm and stuck his hand into his pocket. He felt juiced awkward, to use his private formula. Jesse's eye wandered to the armchair, where a piece of binding was loose, and, possibly to carry out her theory of an observant disposition, she turned and asked him for a pin. Mr. Hoopdriver's hand fluttered instinctively to his lapel, and there, planted by habit, were a couple of stray pins he had impounded. "What an odd place to put pins!" exclaimed Jesse, taking it. "It's Andy," said Mr. Hoopdriver. I saw a chap in a shop do it once." "You must have a careful disposition," she said, over her shoulder, kneeling down to the chair. "In the center of Africa up country, that is, one learns to value pins," said Mr. Hoopdriver, after a perceptible pause. "There weren't over many pins in Africa. They don't lie about on the ground there." His face was now in a fine, red glow. Where would the draper break out next? He thrust his hands into his coat pockets, then took one out again, furtively removed the second pin, and dropped it behind him gently. It fell with a loud ping on the fender. Happily she made no remark, being preoccupied with the binding of the chair. Mr. Hoopdriver, instead of sitting down, went up to the table and stood against it, with his fingertips upon the cloth. They were keeping breakfast a tremendous time. He took up his rolled serviette, looked closely and scrutinizingly at the ring, then put his hand under the fold of the napkin, and examined the texture, and put the thing down again. Then he had a vague impulse to finger his hollow wisdom tooth, happily checked. He suddenly discovered he was standing, as if the table was a counter, and sat down forthwith. He drummed with his hand on the table. He felt dreadfully hot and self-conscious. "Breakfast is late," said Jesse, standing up. "Isn't it?" Conversation was slack. Jesse wanted to know the distance to Ringwood. Then silence fell again. Mr. Hoopdriver, very uncomfortable and studying an easy bearing, looked again at the breakfast things, and then idly lifted the corner of the tablecloth on the ends of his fingers, and regarded it. F-15-3, he thought, privately. "Why do you do that?" said Jesse. "What?" said Hoopdriver, dropping the tablecloth convulsively. "Look at the cloth like that. I saw you do it yesterday too." Mr. Hoopdriver's face became quite a bright red. He began pulling his mustache nervously. I know," he said. "I know. It's a queer habit, I know. But out there, you know, there's native servants, you know, and it's a queer thing to talk about, but one has to look at things to see, don't you know, whether they're quite clean or not. It's got to be a habit." "How odd," said Jesse. "Isn't it?" mumbled Hoopdriver. If I were a Sherlock Holmes, said Jesse, I suppose I could have told you were a colonial from little things like that. But anyhow, I guessed it, didn't I? Yes, said Hoopdriver, in a melancholy tone, you guessed it. Why not seize the opportunity for a neat confession, and add, unhappily in this case you guessed wrong. Did she suspect? Then, at the psychological moment, the girl bumped the door open with her tray, and brought in the coffee and scrambled eggs. I am rather lucky with my intuitions, sometimes, said Jesse. Remorse that had been accumulating in his mind for 2 days surged to the top of his mind. What a shabby liar he was. And, besides, he must sooner or later, inevitably, give himself away. XXXV, Mr. Hoopdriver helped the X and then, instead of beginning, sat with his cheek on his hand, watching Jesse pour out the coffee. His ears were a bright red, and his eyes bright. He took his coffee cup clumsily, cleared his throat, suddenly leant back in his chair, and thrust his hands deep into his pockets. I'll do it, he said aloud. Do what? Said Jesse, looking up in surprise over the coffee pot. She was just beginning her scrambled egg. Own up. Own what? Miss Milton, I'm a liar. He put his head on one side, and regarded her with a frown of tremendous resolution. Then in measured accents, and moving his head slowly from side to side, he announced, I'm a draper. You're a draper? I thought you thought wrong. But it's bound to come up. Pins, attitude, habits, it's plain enough. I'm a draper's assistant let out for a 10 days holiday. Just a draper's assistant. Not much, is it? A counter jumper. A draper's assistant isn't a position to be ashamed of, she said, recovering, and not quite understanding yet what this all meant. Yes, it is, he said, for a man, in this country now, to be just another man's hand, as I am. To have to wear what clothes you are told, and go to church to please customers, and work there's no other kind of men stand such hours. A drunken bricklayer's a king to it. But why are you telling me this now? It's important you should know at once. But, Mr. Benson, that isn't all. If you don't mind my speaking about myself a bit, there's a few things I'd like to tell you. I can't go on deceiving you. My name's not Benson. Why I told you Benson, I don't know. Except that I'm a kind of fool. Well, I wanted somehow to seem more than I was. My name's Hoopdriver. Yes? And that about South Africa and that lion. Well? Lies. Lies. And the discovery of diamonds on the ostrich farm. Lies too. And all the reminiscences of the giraffes lies too. I never rode on no giraffes. I'd be afraid. He looked at her with a kind of sullen satisfaction. He had eased his conscience, anyhow. She regarded him in infinite perplexity. This was a new sight altogether to the man. But why, she began. Why did I tell you such things? I don't know. Silly sort of chap, I expect. I suppose I wanted to impress you. But somehow, now, I want you to know the truth. Silence. Breakfast untouched. I thought I'd tell you, said Mr. Hoopdriver. I suppose it's snobbishness and all that kind of thing, as much as anything. I lay awake pretty near all last night thinking about myself, thinking what a got-up imitation of a man I was, and all that. And you haven't any diamond shares, and you are not going into Parliament, and you're not all lies, said Hoopdriver, in a sepulchral voice. All lies from beginning to end. How I came to tell him I don't know. She stared at him blankly. I never set eyes on Africa in my life, said Mr. Hoopdriver, completing the confession. Then he pulled his right hand from his pocket, and with the nonchalance of one to whom the bitterness of death is past, began to drink his coffee. It's a little surprising, began Jesse, vaguely. Think it over, said Mr. Hoopdriver. I'm sorry from the bottom of my heart. And then breakfast proceeded in silence. Jesse ate very little, and seemed lost in thought. Mr. Hoopdriver was so overcome by contrition and anxiety that he consumed an extraordinarily large breakfast out of pure nervousness, and ate his scrambled eggs for the most part with a spoon that belonged properly to the marmalade. His eyes were gloomily downcast. She glanced at him through her eyelashes. Once or twice she struggled with laughter, once or twice she seemed to be indignant. "I don't know what to think," she said at last. I don't know what to make of you, Brother Chris. I thought, do you know, that you were perfectly honest. And somehow, well, I think so still. Honest with all those lies. I wonder." "I don't," said Mr. Hoopdriver. I'm fair ashamed of myself. But anyhow, I've stopped deceiving you. I thought," said the young lady in gray, "that story of the Lion Lord," said Mr. Hoopdriver. "Don't remind me of that. I thought, somehow, I felt, that the things you said didn't ring quite true." She suddenly broke out in laughter at the expression of his face. "Oh, of course you are honest," she said. "How could I ever doubt it? As if I had never pretended. I see it all now." Abruptly she rose, and extended her hand across the breakfast things. He looked at her doubtfully, and saw the dancing friendliness in her eyes. He scarcely understood at first. He rose, holding the marmalade spoon, and took her proffered hand with abject humility. "El Lord," he broke out, "if you aren't enough, but there. I see it all now." A brilliant inspiration had suddenly obscured her humor. She sat down suddenly, and he sat down too. "You did it," she said, "because you wanted to help me. And you thought I was too conventional to take help from one I might think my social inferior." "That was partly it," said Mr. Hoopdriver. "How you misunderstood me," she said. "You don't mind? It was noble of you. But I am sorry," she said, "you should think me likely to be ashamed of you, because you follow a decent trade." "I didn't know at first, you see," said Mr. Hoopdriver. And he submitted meekly to a restoration of his self-respect. He was as useful a citizen as could be, it was proposed and carried, and his lying was of the noblest. And so the breakfast concluded much more happily than his brightest expectation, and they rode out of ruddy little Blandford, as though no shadow of any sort had come between them. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.